The Washington Post is running a series of articles about Walter Reed Army Medical Center. It's called the Other Walter Reed. The Walter Reed we think of is the Washington Hospital where first-rate surgery and state-of-the-art prosthetics put the bodies and lives of injured servicemen and women back together again. But the Post reports that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have turned Walter Reed into, and I'm quoting, a holding ground for physically and psychologically damaged outpatients. The Post says almost 700 of them have been released from hospital beds but still need treatment or are awaiting bureaucratic decisions before being discharged or returned to active duty. Joining us from the Washington Post are Dana Priest and Anne Hall. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
I'd like to know, first of all, about the status, Dana Priest, of these people, some of whom spend many months, I gather. They are no longer hospital patients at Walter Reed. Do I understand that right?
That's right. Because of medical advances, people don't spend that long of a time anymore in the hospital. So on any given day, there are only about 30 combat wounded in the hospital. The vast majority are released to the outpatient world, which is, they still belong to Walter Reed. There are about 700 of them now. They live mainly in four buildings on Post and one building right outside of Walter Reed, and then scattered throughout the nearby hotels and apartments. But they belong to and they still come to Walter Reed for treatment, rehabilitation, and to get a lot of this paperwork done so that they can either return to their units or be discharged. And that's where the problems lie.
Anne Hull, how would you describe the lives of the servicemen and women, the outpatients whom you interviewed at Walter Reed?
Well, many of them live at a place called the Malone House, which is a fairly elegant four-story hotel on the grounds there of Walter Reed. It used to be for retirees and DOD personnel, but now it's been completely overtaken by the war wounded. And it's really a jarring experience to walk into the Malone House the first time because everyone is injured. They're missing limbs and body parts, and they're walking around bandaged. And for them, this Malone House is the place they spend a year or two as they go through the bureaucracy and the healing process there at Walter Reed.
And this is the good place. This is the elegant place.
It is. Of all the housing, it is considered the primo place to recover.
There's another where the war continues against rats and roaches in the places where the patients live.
That's right. That's Building 18 mainly, which is right outside the Post. It was an old officer's quarters built between the two world wars, and when they became overcrowded with the number of casualties from Iraq and Afghanistan, they found themselves with no more space and quickly opened and renovated this building, Building 18, right across from the front gates. It's really quite decrepit. There's a mice infestation they've been fighting. Mold has gotten into some of the rooms, stained carpets, bad mattresses, just generally not great conditions. But besides that, people there feel isolated and really, frankly, just lonely and forgotten.
You wrote about a man, Staff Sergeant John Daniel Shannon, and then after describing his situation, this paragraph: like Shannon, many soldiers with impaired memory from brain injuries sat for weeks with no appointments and no help from the staff to arrange them. Many disappeared even longer. Some simply left for home.
One of the big problems there is accountability. You would think it'd be easy that once you get out of the hospital, someone else picks you up and they know where you are, but that's not the case, apparently. You are discharged from the hospital, you come into another bureaucracy, and that bureaucracy doesn't always know where you are, and it expects you, heavily medicated probably because you've come out of surgery, to know who you're supposed to contact next. So that is a lot of the problems. And the people who are in charge of you, sometimes they themselves are wounded. And they may have PTSD or other mental problems at the time. And so there were people and are still people who don't know what they're supposed to do next and sit there waiting, sometimes in their rooms, trying to figure out who's going to call me. Staff Sergeant Shannon said it the best. He said, "Geez Louise, people, I'm your patient." And he was expecting them to call him and tell him what to do. They got a little miffed at him when he didn't show up after a couple weeks.
But Anne Hall, do I understand this correctly, that these outpatients who have been treated at Walter Reed but may be in terrible shape psychologically or physically in pain, it's not bureaucratically clear whether they're to be returned to active duty or not, or whether they're to be discharged? Doesn't discharge seem pretty obvious in many of these cases?
Not necessarily. They first have to heal, and the Army has to make sure they heal first, and then they start this very long, arduous process of being evaluated by a medical evaluation board and then a physical evaluation board. All that can take months. It ends up taking twice as long as the Army says. But they are... You know, a lot of these patients are heavily medicated. I think we said in the story, the Malone House is afloat on a river of painkillers and antipsychotics. And their mental state and their medication slows the process down as well. But not all can go back for duty. Some can return to duty, and they all have to be evaluated. And then their disability rating has to be assigned, if that.
This series of articles we read is based on many, many interviews over months conducted without the knowledge of the people who run Walter Reed. What do the people who run Walter Reed say about the series now that they've read it?
The Army has acted very quickly in response to these stories. They are in the process of repairing Building 18. They're in the process of reassessing how they can do a better job. They've been meeting on the subject. And so as we've received hundreds of responses from individuals wanting to know how they can help, they have too. And at the moment, they say they are looking over all the issues and they're going to come up with a game plan very soon.
I would like to add that the stories could not have been written without the courage of those who agreed to be interviewed. The stories just wouldn't have been possible without them coming forward and speaking publicly about these problems that are usually kept quite private at Walter Reed.
And you observe that not everyone you interviewed was able to summon that courage to go on the record about
that right.
condition. Well, thanks to both of you, and we look forward to the series continuing in the Washington Post, Dana Priest and Ann Hull.
Thank you.
And their series is called The Other Walter Reed.